Welcome to Sense and Sustainability, your podcast channel for sustainable procurement. We hope you like what you hear. Please go to www.iso2400.org for more information, learning resources, tools, and much more.
Welcome to Sense and Sustainability, your podcast for sustainable procurement. I'm Sean McCarthy, Director of Action Sustainability Community Interest Company. I'm delighted to introduce part two of two podcasts with Luca from the United States, where we have a conversation about how the way in which he's transformed healthcare procurement in the United States could go even further to deliver sustainability objectives. I do hope you enjoy it. I guess the other big issue in you know, these types of products that we buy around the world are the ethical standards. So issues around modern slavery, labor abuses, those sorts of things. Have you encountered any problems or any challenges in that area?
I have not directly encountered any problems or challenges in that area. I think that it's something that, and ultimately, like people like me and healthcare businesses that are using the supplies, they're not the ones necessarily, I mean, in my experience, thinking about it on a day-to-day. We depend on, you know, the regulatory agencies in the United States to sort of make sure that the places that we're buying these very regulated supplies are, you know, good conditions, right? The things getting injected into you aren't covered in sort of disease or filth, and that they're being made in an ethical way. There are certain standards that the U.S. tries to uphold related to sort of these ethical concerns, but I can't say that I confidently believe things are going right in every little factory that the FDA has approved. A lot of these factories have not been visited by an FDA inspector in 5+ years. And I think it's something like 10% of the factories or manufacturers that are FDA licensed, when they do get visited, end up getting their licenses revoked because they're not up to standard, right? So that's a scary thing to think about. I think that in a sort of COVID and quarantining world, we probably did an even worse job of monitoring the quality and ethical concerns of these manufacturers. And it's disappointing and scary, but I don't pretend to know, like I have an idea on how to solve that problem.
No, I don't think any of us do actually, but yeah. No, it's interesting to understand your perspective. This is purely US-based products at the moment, or do you have world domination ambitions?
I mean, primarily US for right now. We actually do serve some companies in Canada, which is interesting because logistics and sort of the delivery of supplies that we help people buy is all sort of the same. But it's because of compliance, right? Like legal compliance and all the laws built around, you know, the healthcare supply chain, it's hard to roll something out under new sets of laws. And even on a state-by-state basis, you know, it's hard to stay compliant with states. So for now, it's the US.
Yeah, as you say, very difficult because of the compliance, the certification is going to be different in different parts of the world. Absolutely amazing. Luca, I think we've covered most of what I would like to cover with you. I think it's a fascinating initiative. Is there anything else that you would like to cover off in this discussion?
I guess, yeah, I'm pretty interested. Do you believe that the sustainability or recyclability of an individual healthcare product is important at this stage of like implementing more sustainable practices in the healthcare supply chain? Like, do you think like when we talk about like a water bottle, is it recyclable or is it biodegradable, right? Like you see some of these things popping up in medical supplies and they don't feel like they have as much traction, at least with our healthcare buyers, as you know, they do with consumers, you know, people wanting to have a biodegradable, whatever, shirt or, you know, fork or whatever it may be. I'm curious your perspective on that.
I think it's coming. I've no doubt. And it's quite interesting, you know, listening to your perspective compared with talking to the guys from the National Health Service in the UK last week, where, yeah, I mean, they were talking to me about nitrile gloves and the consumption of them, where they come from, the ethical standards, you know, most come from Malaysia. Most of these organizations that supply them have pretty poor track records around slave labor and forced labor and those sorts of issues. So they are thinking about this, and they're also looking at, I suppose, some quite simple things like looking at the procedures that are in place to say, when do you actually need gloves? Because what they're finding is people actually tend to put these gloves on and they don't necessarily need them. Well, then that's one pair of gloves that's been disposed of and going off to landfill that maybe shouldn't have been used in the first place. And the thinking there, of course, is the most sustainable product you ever buy is the one that you don't buy if you don't need it at all. So there is some focus on, I mean, obviously disposal of clinical waste is a massive issue and very highly specialised, etc. But there certainly seems to be a trend in Europe of looking at end of life of consumables across the piece, but within the healthcare sector as well. So, yeah, I think it's coming. It's possibly not now. Maybe it's not now in the US. And of course, everybody's got over the whole COVID crisis where nobody really cared where the stuff came from. You just needed to get it. And where it was going after you'd used it really didn't matter because we were in the middle of a pandemic and people were dying. And, you know, that's people's health was of primary consideration. But yeah, I think the end of life disposal of products will become an issue in the healthcare sector. It may take a little longer in the US, obviously, because you have a very different healthcare sector. In the UK, it's all nationalized, it's all paid for through taxation, where in the US, it's paid for through insurance. So it's a different type of system. But I think my limited experience of looking at sustainable procurement in the US is, you know, this is coming and the federal government is starting to look really hard at product life cycles. I mean, more so in things like the construction sector, but it's coming. And I think where there are areas of highly regulated procurement, as you know, the healthcare sector will be, I can see in the next 2 or 3 years the FDA are going to be looking at this. Be very surprised if they don't. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. I think it's interesting when you see. Right. When you see someone sort of balancing like need versus, you know, luxury or comfort, they, you know, obviously choose need when times are tough. And in the healthcare space, times are always tough. The interesting thing is we've got the collision of two needs, right, in the healthcare procurement and supply chain space, in both sustainability and in, you know, healthcare. I think it will lead, like you said, to delays compared to other industries in the US because, you know, if the biodegradable glove is 1% worse, right, than the non-biodegradable glove, leading to 1%, you know, higher transmission of disease rates for physicians or something, like they won't budge on that. Where you would, if it was like, okay, my shirt might tear, my fork might bust, you know, 1 in 100 or something. Other question I've got for you is, I mean, yeah, you got any advice on sort of sustainable practices, the most important sustainable practices we should focus on folding into Grapevine as we're in our nascence and heading into our second year now after launch?
I'd look at the international standard, which is really, you know, kind of what we're all about. ISO 2400 would give you some sort of strategic framework around sustainability, and it would help you to decide on your priorities. But I guess in your area of interest where you are, obviously, carbon, which you're looking at anyway, you know, because you're doing a great job of looking at reducing the transportation in the interest of reducing cost. And that's fantastic because you'd reduce carbon as well. And the environmental impact of logistics and transportation must be massive. I would look at packaging because, you know, it's what the stuff comes in, not necessarily the stuff itself, because as you say, yeah, if the biodegradable rubber glove is you know, 1%, if it's 1 cent more expensive or 1% less effective, the chances are the user won't buy it. But what does it come in? How are these things packaged? Because that's all added cost. You know, I mean, packaging for a product is something that you have to pay to get rid of once you've actually used the product, whatever way you need to dispose of it. So better standards of recycled and recyclable packaging, or preferably less packaging or no packaging at all, could well be a very significant issue for you. Ethical standards, as I say, yes, it's a highly regulated sector. How well does that regulation really work? I'm not sure. There is legislation coming into the US to say that for certain products, if you can't demonstrate that they were made without forced labor, then you can't import them. And there's a big controversial issue at the moment around solar panels coming from China. There's a lot of them held up in US ports, unable to be imported because it is a kind of a positive discrimination. If you can't demonstrate they were, if you cannot demonstrate they were not made by slave labor, then you can't bring them in. It's as simple as that. And of course, that in turn holds up the response to climate change, because we all want solar panels, you know. We want more and more solar energy, but there are ethical considerations for where they are. And then end of life, you know, particularly for consumables, which, you know, a lot of healthcare products are, what happens to them at the end of their life? How are they disposed of? And are there better ways of disposing of them? The other thing I would think about again is use and demand control. So quite interesting, if you have software around inventory management, how can you use that? How can you use the data that comes out of that software to say, actually, comparably, you know, this hospital is actually using twice as much of X as that hospital. I wonder why. So if you can help organizations to reduce their consumption of stuff, I would think that's probably quite a good business proposition. If you have the data and if you have the capability of analyzing that data, and then that data actually helps your customers, ironically, to buy less.
Yeah.
That's that's a sustainable outcome.
I'm all for helping them buy less. I mean, even if our goal is, even if they buy the same number of like individual products, gloves, needles, syringes, whatever it may be, they should, the market, we want to fold in half. We want to cut the US's spend on, you know, healthcare supplies from somewhere around, you know, $1 trillion to half of that, just by sort of shopping from smarter sources and cutting out the inefficient sort of shipping routes that we can avoid. I think it'd be very interesting to even more ambitiously cut those numbers down further by helping retrain people to use supplies in the clinical setting more efficiently. We do something with the inventory management system. We built out a sort of barcode scanner, right? So when the nurse or physician takes it off the shelf, right, like a box or whatever it may be, they scan it on their phone and it reduces one from inventory. So we do have a lot of the information, you know, required to see not only, you know, what people are using, at what rates they're using it, and help them manage inventory, but also see who's responsible. Maybe you've got one nurse that's using 10 times as many boxes of gloves as another nurse, right? And we actually can see that data. I haven't thought about it to use it in a operational improvement way, but you're right that would be a huge way to cut people's overusage or bad behaviors.
Well, exactly. And you know, and get some competition going, you know, some benchmarking. I mean, in some cases, I'm sure it will be hard to benchmark because there are probably reasons why one nurse uses 10 times as many gloves as another, because he or she is in a different ward and, you know, and different types of patients. But as the data builds and builds, and you can start to understand the patterns of supply and demand by different functions, I suspect with your sort of, you and your people's software brains, I'm sure you can work out ways of using that data, as you say, that helps people to buy less. And that could be a fantastic outcome.
Yeah, it would be pretty fantastic. One other question I've got for you is, you mentioned packaging. I mean, have you seen any revolutionary, you know, mind-blowing things in packaging as a consumer, not related to Grapevine? I mean, I know there are problems with packaging. I order stuff on Amazon. I get all these boxes within boxes within boxes, and it's just, I'm throwing them out. I'm getting, you know, it's a whole crazy thing. I'm spending hours breaking down boxes.
Yeah, don't we just hate the boxes that come through from Amazon? Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think any of us are in the position to influence Amazon's packaging strategy much as I would love to. Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, some of the mind-blowing things I see is the kind of no packaging at all. Now, okay, I understand in healthcare products, you know, sometimes packaging is inevitable and you have to have it. But there's things like cans of beer. I think it might have been Molson in the US, where, you know, you get like a six pack of beer and you get like some cardboard thing around it that contains the six pack. And they actually moved to having just like a small dab of adhesive so that the six cans of beer are stuck together rather than having any packaging. There's a company called, it's pronounced Chinups, but it's spelled Kinarps, K-I-N-A-R-P-S. They make furniture in Sweden. And they started, you know, they used to deliver furniture in cardboard packaging or whatever. And what they moved to is putting blankets over them. So actually, you get your packaging, you get your piece of furniture, your chair, your table, or whatever it is, and the person that delivers it just takes the blanket off of it and takes the blanket back. So
Huh.
it's no packaging at all. Another lovely example, actually, in a hospital from a couple of years ago, I was working with Skanska, the big construction firm, and they were doing a massive refurbishment of Barts Hospital in London. And they were replacing thousands and thousands of lights. So these lights are coming in traditional cardboard packaging. And 10% of them were broken when they came in. So not only did they have to dispose of the packaging after they'd taken the luminaires out of their packaging, they found a very high percentage of them were coming through broken. So they moved over to returnable plastic crates. So a plastic crate that could be folded down and sent back at the end. So not only then did they not have to, so the supplier would turn up with these lights in plastic crates. You hand over the plastic crates that we used last time, compressed down, the supplier takes them away. So you've got no disposal of packaging. You don't have to get rid of it. But the big side benefit that they found was actually they weren't coming through broken. And it was more
Huh.
efficient to take the glass out of the plastic crate and fit it than it was to get it out of a cardboard box or whatever it was in the first place. So there's a lot of big wins in packaging if you kind of think about either no packaging at all or returnable packaging or different ways to actually package a product. Another example from quite some time ago now, actually, I was working with a company called Premier Farnell. They do operate in the States. And they supply electronic goods. So all the little bits and pieces of resistors and plugs and wires and all of that sort of stuff to industrial customers. And they used to supply their products in jiffy bags, in these like plastic padded bags. And the Environment Agency, who were a tiny, tiny customer in the scheme of things, I think they were less than 1% of their customer turnover, and contacted them to say, look, guys, we can't really accept these products in these bags anymore because we can't recycle them. And we're the Environment Agency and we need to do things responsibly. So if you can't do something about it, then we're going to have to stop doing business with you. Well, really, not supplying the Environment Agency was not a big deal to Premier Farnell. It wouldn't have appeared on the dial of their finances at all. But they did it. And what they did was they started straight away transferring the Environment Agency supplier from jiffy bags to boxes, to cardboard boxes, not ideal. While they did the research into, okay, here's this bag thing, and it's got some plastic inside it and some paper outside it, and you can't recycle it. Because they're actually very influential in the market, they buy millions of these damn things. So although the Environment Agency were very influential with them, they were very influential with their packaging supplier, and they said, we want to do some research to find a more sustainable product that can be recycled. So one question from the Environment Agency led to the whole of Premier Farnell globally changing their packaging into a type of bag that's more recyclable. So there's some really amazing examples of just rethinking the supply chain and being an intelligent client at the top of the value chain that actually enables you to influence further down. Now, what you guys can do with that, because obviously you're very software fast moving, etc., but as you become more influential in the marketplace, then it does give you the ability to ask those questions
Yeah.
and provides a more
Very.
sustainable outcome for your customers and lower costs because you're not paying to get rid of this stuff in a way that it can't be recycled.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Huh. Well, thanks for sharing those. I'm inspired by the different sort of
Well, I'm inspired
very
by your
different
story as
creative
well. So,
solutions
yeah, this could
on
be
packaging.
a beautiful relationship. I'd love to get you on a call sometime with, because I seem to spend quite a bit of time talking about healthcare type products, and bloody rubber gloves seem to keep coming up every time I talk to somebody because it's not just in healthcare as well. I mean, there are other
Food service,
applications in
even
food and
electronics.
catering and things like that where these products are used. So it might be good at some point to get some people together across the world to talk about these issues because we're all trying to tackle the same thing.
Yeah, I'd absolutely enjoy that. So anytime. All right.
So, Luca, thanks very much. It's been fascinating talking to you, and absolutely brilliant initiative. I wish you well with it, and I'm sure we'll be talking again at some point in the future.
All right. Well, I look forward to it. Thank you very much for having me on, and good luck, everybody.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast on Sense and Sustainability. Please listen out for more episodes. For more information, learning resources, tools, and much more content on sustainable procurement, go to www.iso2400.org.